John Woodcock, or Wooders as he became known, was nothing short of a long parachute club legend. Wooders was the cricket correspondent of the Times from 1954 to 1987, and in doing so became friends with some of the greats of our game. Greats who came and played in games in Long Parish, Richie Benno, Dennis Compton and Colin Cowdrey have all played at the Furnace. He helped put the club on the map and was a keen follower throughout his years, often popping down to the ground to watch a few overs. Right. That's the serious stuff out of the way. Let's get into the pod. Welcome to the third episode of the Baggy Blues Pod. We are back by popular demand with listener numbers climbing through the roof. I think we got about 15 maybe last. Actually, no, that's quite a lot. We probably didn't get that money. In this episode, we have a roundup of the games since we last played, which is quite a few, to be fair. Since we last podded, I should say. A look at what makes a good Hampshire League cricket ground. That's going to be a big topic of discussion. We've got an in-depth interview with Warren. Goes into a bit of the club's history that I think the three of us didn't really know about, quite enjoyed learning about. And then, on a slightly more jolly note, we've got a quiz from Diesel. So hopefully there's something for everyone in this. And Spear is going to kick off the roundup with a look at the threes.
Yeah, I just want to say, for the benefit of the listener, there's about five kids in the pub here with us. Not with us, we're a different group. Between the age of about one and three, so there might not be too much swearing in the first section.
Yeah.
But until they piss off. McGee's, they've had a brilliant month. Looking at the website and also listening intently to the stories in the pub and after the game. They've had 5 wins, 5-0, and they've basically, in all 5 games, given the opposition an absolute shellacking. So a quick rundown here, played Ampfield, won a toss, had a stick, won by 93 runs, Blackie and Barnold with 50s.
And that's huge from Barnold.
Yeah, big from Barnold. And I think that might have been the same night where he cycled frantically to the pub.
Oh, yeah.
After.
But he also, let's point out, he didn't cycle directly to the pub.
Yeah, he what, did
it. He sort of, do you not, oh, you weren't oh, there. Yeah,
well, it was a bit confusing because he said, I'm on my way, I'll be there in about an hour and 20 minutes. I thought, where is he going? But it turned out because I think he's training to get into the military or something, isn't he? So
possibly, yeah.
He did a big loop of, you know, all the local villages.
And then ended up at the pub.
Yeah.
Bought a few jugs.
Bought a couple of jugs. Yeah, because he had some birthday money from Jarnold.
Oh.
So we got a couple of jugs.
He was just tapping.
Barnold, it's like Barnold things, isn't it?
They then went on and beat Red Lynch by 31 runs. That's probably the closest game they've had this season. Evergreen Gary Taplin and Brendan Tasker with 50s. Kieran Tasker with 3 wickets. They then beat Michelmarsh and Timsbury by 143 runs. Ex-chair, 106. Connell Proctor, 5-2.
That's criminal, isn't it?
Bill.
And I think that's his first Michelle, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
They then went over to Hungerford, had a bowl, rolled him for 60, got it won by 8 wickets. Jack Cady, 5-9. Some absolutely disgusting figures.
Criminal figures coming out of the McGee's.
And then most recently, Steeple Langford, again bowl first, rolled him for 40-odd. Oliver Oram, 3-8.
I have a stick, lads.
And
make a game of it.
Chair, 33 red.
Just took command of the chase.
Yeah, saw the boys home. So, I mean, out of those 5 games, they've had 4 absolute maulings. There's not really much competition down there for them. So I suggest, lads, win a toss and have a stick and entertain the crowd. And apparently they've been getting quite big crowds up at Leckford.
Oh, really?
Is what I'm hearing, because it's quite a sort of...
Family friendly.
Yeah, a lot of families, a lot of young lads with their parents coming to watch and things like that.
A lot of time for that.
And I think we said it last time, but you've got a couple of old stages, Blackie and Gary Taplin and an ex-chair just sort of nurturing the youngsters through.
It's what the McGee's was made for, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
It was of old times.
Yeah, it's what the McGee's is all about. And the young kids that are in the pub with us, I think they started listening to podcasts, they've all started crying simultaneously. Anyway, well done the McGee's, and long may it continue. They're having a great season.
So on to the twos. Also seem to, they've won every game that they've played. They seem to be tearing up
this league that they're in. Got a very strong side for the league. So starting off, they got a win at home against Hartley Whitney by 6 wickets. Hartley Whitney all out for 152. And Tobes with 3 for 26. Now, I can't remember, is that when he took his hat-trick? He's taken one hat-trick this year.
Yeah.
I think it might be then, looking at the...
The numbers add up.
The numbers add up. And I'm looking at the scorecard, well, I think it was then.
I remember him saying that it was the last three balls of his spell. And he hadn't taken any wickets beforehand.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Also suggests it might have been 9-10 Jack, so... Yeah.
It was lower down. It was lower down the order when I looked.
Real hat trick?
Oh, I don't know. We'll let him have it.
Well done, Tobes, mate. Having a great season.
And then Tim Trinder playing in the Magoos. 80 red, just like classy, you know.
Batted.
Well batted. But then they played Hollybourne away, won by 118. Tim Trinder, 82 out of a total of 148.
Dominating.
And then Geordie took the ball. And website,
oh, it was that week,
website best figures.
Is it? Ever?
On the website. Yeah. Took Spears record.
Oh, wow.
And he took 7 for 12.
Didn't want the record.
Next.
And bowled Hollybourne out for 30. Then they played Eastern, which was a bit eventful. I played in that game. Kerr 50 and out. Jamie was man-cadded. Kerr sort of very angry towards the man who did the man-cadding. And then
don't believe that.
I know. And also later on that over, the bloke got him out, which is, you hate to see it. And but also watching from the sidelines, I was not surprised.
Steam coming out.
Yeah, steam was coming out. Then we bowled them out for 57. I got 4 for 7, which was
all
right.
Has any team gone for more than 100 this year? Seconds or thirds? It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. I got 4 for 7. We allowed. Got 5. I don't know how to talk about it.
Oh, got 5 for them.
I got 5 for, and then this little lad, he was barely taller than the stumps, bless him. And he played a very good defensive shot, but it went onto his pad and rolled back onto the stumps. And he was crying, so we just allowed him back. It turned out he was the son of the bloke who did the man-cadding, which in a way I thought was sort of like, we allowed him back, which I thought was...
Bittersweet.
Bittersweet, but also sort of a bigger sort of fuck you to that guy.
Yeah.
Well, because, you were there, though. I know we talked a bit about the man-cad. You were there. What actually happened on the day?
So the bloke's come in to bowl, and Jamie does do this. He's guilty of it.
Yeah.
And... As a bowler, I don't think it's that good a way to get someone out. But if someone is blatantly doing it, you've got every right to give them a warning, I think.
Yeah.
But this guy went no warning, straight in, took the bells off, appealed. And Stevie Trinder, you know the sort of the passive umpire he is. He doesn't like to get too involved in the game. He sort of said...
Type 2. Very type 2.
Very type 2. He sort of said, are you sure you want to do this? And they went, yeah, I'm sure. And they went, well... He's out then, and then all hell broke loose, really. Baz was looking very menacing from the sidelines. And then what made it even better was that Drinks was the next over.
Oh, God.
And Baz was sort of standing on the sidelines like, oh, I'm going to fucking kill this bloke. You fucking.
What is your position on man-cads?
I think if you give them a warning, and they keep doing it, I think they're fair game. What do you think?
The rules state that if, you know, you're out your crease and take the bells off, then it's just out, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's not that difficult. I've changed my mind on this, actually.
Yeah.
I used to think it was just shithousery.
Yeah.
And that's it. Don't do it. But now I just think, well, how difficult is it for the batsman to stay in the crease until you physically see the ball come out of the guy's hand?
I understand that at the elite level.
Yeah.
I would say at this level.
It's not needed at club level.
It's just a bit, it just doesn't sit right with a lot of people. I think, as you say, warning, fine.
I know it's not in the rules that you have to give a warning.
Yeah, you don't have to give a warning, but it's just, it's cricket, innit? It's one of the things you do.
I would say on that, sounds like Steve Trinder dealt with it perfectly.
Yeah.
It's a difficult situation for an umpire to be in, because... It's very unusual.
Yeah.
And you can't dismiss it completely because it's in the rules that it's out.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think, you know, the fact that he offered it to the team offered them the chance to rescind it if they wanted to, and they still didn't want to. So you say, okay.
But then it's out. You can't argue with it. That's the thing.
But I think the way that Steve dealt with it
was correct.
Will have actually sat, was correct, but it will have sat really badly with that bloke who eventually would have reflected on it and thought, probably shouldn't have done that.
If you were on the other side, how would you have gone about it? Would you have, because I was speaking to Jacko in the pub yesterday, and he was like, if it was me, I'd have man-catted them all of the other team.
Yeah.
If it was him.
What, like, how would you react afterwards?
Either revenge or in terms of, like, do you just leave it, do you whatever? Would you go, right, two could play this game, we'll do the same?
I think I'm in favour of a sort, especially in this game where, I'm going to be honest, from the start of them batting, it was quite clear they were not going to get our score.
Yeah.
Right, so I think then you adopt a position of we just beat them and just rise above it.
Yeah.
And you just let the cricket do the talking.
Yeah, the cricket do the talking.
If there was a situation where it was a really close game, both teams quite evenly matched, and you had a, let's say they needed 10 to win, one wicket left, and you could see that the non-striker was itching, to get a run.
It's a very moral dilemma, that.
Yeah.
You know, as I said on the last podcast, second team, never dull.
Never dull. So we have moved on from that with a win away at St Marybourne, a game that
home to St Marybourne.
Oh, was it? Sorry, home to St Marybourne. COVID wiped out the first team fixture due to restrictions with isolation. So Diesel, you dropped down.
Yeah.
Mikey dropped down. Zach and the GOAT stepped down as well. A few sort of 54 for Mikey. Zach got 40, and then we bowled St Marybourne out for 80. The GOAT taking 3 for 6.
Yeah.
Just GOAT doing GOAT things, really. And then a win at home to Heriot. Kerr, big ton.
Tunning up,
which is something that's massive for him, massive for the team, and I think something that he should be looking to repeat
at
least once more this season with the standard of the cricket and the way he's playing at the moment. He can definitely do that. And then Heriot, not really attempting the chase. We got back from Lymington, didn't they? And
Still
10 overs to go, and they were 60 for 7 or something.
Yeah.
All out for 76. Wickets just shared about. And I've got as a little note for next week, Kerr is not there. Big game against Littleton that has serious title deciding potential, as it's the top two going against each other, who are comfortably clear. Well, not comfortably clear, but nicely clear of the rest of the field.
Yeah.
So go up, innit?
I'll say just quickly on the Magoos. When we got back, say the situation, the game was just done.
What, Saturday?
Yeah. They needed, it was just, it was completely over. But there was still a little bit of needle. There's still room for a little bit of needle at the end, wasn't there? So when we got in, I think it was Johnny Maxwell was just about to run in, and the batsman pulled away, which,
in his right,
to his credit, is very annoying as well.
It is, yeah.
But I think, rather than just going back and then coming in and bowling, you know, he stood at the end of his mark, stared at the guy at the other end, was like, "Are you ready now?" And then he ran in and bowled him, and then just pointed towards the pavilion.
Yeah, just send him off.
When they're like 60 for 9, chasing 240.
Yeah, I think the clean version was "Off you go, mate." Anyway,
the McGee's.
Batter's game, innit?
Oh no, the ones.
Yeah. The ones. Yeah. So the next game after the last pod was Eastern. I wasn't there, but we bowled first, and they got about 130 after being 90 for 2. So, good bowling performance. Chased it reasonably comfortably, apparently. Scott got 55 red. Apparently a very type 1 umpire.
Oh,
if that rings any bells.
They sent down... Oh, you were there, Brent,
weren't
you?
Yeah.
Because Brent was the other umpire.
Oh, yes. This is what I wanted to come on to. What went on?
So, neither team had an umpire. Both teams applied for a panel. There was only one available,
Oh, you weren't playing, but
I wasn't playing. I went along to watch.
So they sent one of their A grade umpires.
He was very good.
To be fair, he was very, very good. And is it like we were talking about the last pod? Exactly what you want in an umpire. Mm-hmm. Just got on with the job really, and just let the players play, and no incident at all. No. But Brint did a couple of cans for the game and thought, I'll get myself involved. Bit of type 2.
Sneaking in.
So he offered to do square leg, came out to square leg, did about 2 overs, didn't he?
And then they said, hang on, we don't want you doing square leg.
Yeah. The Eastern lads said,
really?
Yeah, they said, no, we'll send a guy out. We don't want you doing that.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, you were square legging while we were fielding?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, what? So they had blokes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
had you made any decisions? Or you
nah, nah.
You just pissing about?
I wasn't pissing about. Spear did ask me how many balls are left in the over, and I wasn't really sure. Yeah.
It's first team cricket, Brent.
Yeah.
Then I moved on to try and do the scoreboard, which didn't go terribly well either.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, anything you tried your hand at, you just,
it's just fucked up. Fucked up, yeah.
Because at one point he had him, I think he had him 70 for 9, because you put a 9 instead of a 1.
Yeah.
And apparently the oppo were drinking beer in the tea break.
Yeah, picked up on that.
I didn't see that.
There's a couple of lads, tea break, and then a couple of their lads doing a lap when we were... tell you what, it was when we were still fielding first innings. A couple of lads who were out doing a lap and having a can.
I got a lot of time for that.
And then they were having a swill during the drinks break of our batting innings.
Fair enough.
So yeah.
So we moved on to Compton. Batted first, got skittled for 115, but then bowled them out for 90 odd. Clarkey first, Michelle Pfeiffer on the website.
Well bowled.
He tells us he's had more, but. Officially on
before
the website.
Records began
pre-2010. So we moved on to Hursley, bowled first, and they got 170. Somehow got up to 170. We then collapsed in the run chase, having been 120 for 2. And then we moved on to Lymington a couple of days ago, bowled them out for 107, and got it 3 down in about 20 overs or so. Brint Dog 4 for, Walter Kane 39 red. So what's that? 4-1? 3-1?
Three wins, one loss.
Three wins, one loss. Very good.
Pretty successful time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, just going on from that Lymington game, it's quite interesting just doing a lap and having a look at the ground itself. And I was thinking to myself, you know, what makes a good Hampshire League cricket ground? And that's a ground there that's in the top league, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm.
But I hate it when there's like a football pitch or... Yeah. Excess boundary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's just unused. It just doesn't look right, feel right, you know. Because especially when the football pitch comes onto a little bit of the outfield,
yeah,
there's some sort of like
the same,
bit of marking. Well. There's like there's a hole where a goalpost goes in or something like that, and it just annoys me a bit, to be honest.
Yeah. Or multi-purpose grounds.
Multi-purpose. And to be fair, Lymington's—they've done quite a good job because the football pitch is at the end, and that's quite rare. Normally a football pitch comes down the side of one of the outfields, isn't it? Like at Compton or like Fair Oak or something like that. And it just makes the outfield can never really recover properly. So Lymington do it right, but I was just thinking about, you know, what makes like a very, very good and enjoyable ground to play at, good quality.
Yeah.
And you know, what sort of typical and characteristic of sort of the Hampshire League.
I think you want sort of like an aesthetic scene.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Some sort of background arrangement of trees that's nice.
Yeah, because you can get like Lymington again, you know, houses on one side.
Yeah.
And there's a little pathway, wasn't there? So that fence at the end, you just see like a head of the fence.
Yeah.
Just floating along.
Oh, yeah.
You know? You want to, like, somewhere like, somewhere like the Furnace or.
Where it's
like Oakley or somewhere like that, where you're just looking out across fields and sort of into the distance and Hursley Park's a bit like that. Pavilion as well, also quite important.
Do you prefer an old school or a modern pavilion?
Well, a bit of both. I'm not
that fussy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be like modern, you know, balcony, state of the art.
Because,
you know, you've got old ones like Hurstbourne Priors.
Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. That's one of the most idyllic grounds in the whole county, and that's a proper old pavilion. But then you've also got, you know, Basingstoke or Ryde or something like that, which has got like a modern pavilion with a balcony, and that's also pretty good. But I think as long as like the pavilion is literally on the boundary edge.
Yeah. Yes, that is key.
Because how annoying is that when you play at a ground where
you have to walk fucking miles.
Yeah.
Compton. That's out Compton right now.
Hate Compton.
Yeah.
So that type of thing where you have to walk out from the pavilion to the boundary edge, and you have to do it at Fair Oak as well. And it's, I think
Fair Oak, the twos pitch we played at.
Even at Hursley a little bit, the pavilion wasn't.
It's not right there, is it?
No, I'll No, I'd go against that for Hursley. Because you've got the pavilion, but then you've also got the little sort of fenced area.
Yeah, I quite like that.
And then you're literally, you're on the boundary.
I don't know, but you still see people carrying chairs out to the boundary, don't out to the boundary edge to watch.
I get.
Which shows that the pavilion's not at the right angle.
Just move it. Move it.
The pavilion.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, places like Compton and Fair Oak, I find that quite soulless when you have to, you know, set up camp somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
Other than the pavilion.
I'm not a fan of that at all. So, excess field is bad.
Yeah.
We've agreed that.
Yeah. What's your take on slopes?
I don't... Slopes, if they're good for bowling, I don't mind them at all.
Yeah.
I don't like a slope. I like a flat ground.
I mean, some of the famous ones, you've got Ventnor.
I've never played there. I've watched games there, but I've never played there, and it looks odd.
Well, the slope came in very handy the last time we played, because it was about 5 or 6 years ago. Don't think either of you would have been there. And we decided to camp on the outfield after the game.
Yeah.
Famously. We skittled them, and the game was over by about 4:30. So we were trying to think of things to do to basically pass the time before we went out. And we suggested having a stump run against them.
Right.
Which involved necking the pint at the top of the hill. And I've never been... People always go...
Yeah,
well,
I have photos. Yeah, I've known how steep it is, yeah.
But people who explain it to people that haven't been there are always literally like, oh, it's literally vertical. It's literally vertical. I've been there. You haven't. I've been there. It's vertical. So we were necking a pint at the top of the hill, sprinting down the hill, head on the stump 10 times, and then trying to get back up the hill. And I think that there is a video somewhere. There's a video of it somewhere. And I think Will De Canai especially just goes off at 45 degrees and flat on his face. So slope came in handy there.
Shock.
Yeah. There's quite a formidable slope at Littleton as well.
Yes.
Eastern, side, obviously, in the bowl.
I don't mind bowl so much.
And as well as that, you've got things like odd-sized boundaries, so like Overton...
With a little, yeah.
It just ruins it, really.
Yeah. As a bowler.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
It's just shit.
It's just shit cricket.
And it's like, for a team, it's like, it's in your head. The second you get there, it's literally in your head.
Is it Overton?
Yeah.
And Oakley as well.
Or just any short boundary. Yeah.
It is tiny.
But especially, I don't mind it so much when they're all short. It's when there's like an Overton where there's just one corner. It's tiny, like 15, 20 metres. And then...
Yeah, definitely.
You guys are up for drinks?
Yeah, we'll get some more, shall we?
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
So, we've talked a bit about what we don't like. We've talked a bit about what we do like. So, we've all sort of made a little top three of our favourite grounds. Obviously, excluding the furnace, because that is
a given.
It goes without saying. Spear, do you want to lead us off with your three?
Yeah, sure. So, my third is East Wooday. Really nice ground. Played quite a lot of cricket there.
Very wicket.
Yeah, very flat wicket, you know, beautifully manicured. And all the things that we said there, you know, it's private, the pavilion's right on the edge of the boundary, lovely views out across the fields and stuff like that. My second is the old Hambledon ground, the bat and ball, where supposedly the first ever game of cricket took place.
Really?
Yeah, I think like the rules... possibly invented there and
something like that.
Just for nostalgia, really. And there's a pub next door, really good pub next door, which has got all the sort of memorabilia and stuff in. And then, not the greatest ground in terms of like quality, but just a lot of history. And actually, the views there are pretty good. And then Berkeley is my favourite one, obviously, my old club. Not just because it's my old club, it's also a beautiful little ground. A lot of good memories there. Very picturesque, and we had a brilliant clubhouse which was basically like a pub. So, you know, on like a Saturday afternoon, you'd get a huge crowd. People would like spill out the pub, and even people didn't know anything about cricket, they just
would be...
spill out and like heckle you, and you know, like lean over the rail and shout things. And it was a sports club basically, so you'd have all sorts of people in there. And especially if like a game got tight on like a really nice day, and everyone knew obviously you know, which team Berkeley was, and they'd come out and you'd get...
I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
Some serious support.
Some absolute scenes up there, to be honest. Yeah. Sometimes, yeah. And obviously the Trinders, if they're listening, will know full well what that was all about.
If they're listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course they are.
So my top three, I've got Leckford for, you know, a bit of nostalgia reasons. Played there quite a bit when we were younger. Also, bowling down that hill is one of my favourite things, because it is, like, it's not really that noticeable from the boundary's edge, I wouldn't say.
The right to left?
The down, the slope, yeah.
Yeah.
But it is, it's not like, you wouldn't go, oh my god, this is on a massive hill, but it's the perfect hill to run in down, because it's not too steep. As you know, when you run down a hill that's a bit too steep, you sort of, your pace is a bit off, but it's just enough that your paces are fine, but it just pushes you with a bit more momentum. So, I mean, it's just ideal. Obviously, beautiful scenery as well. Big area, private, as we said. Very, very important. And a lovely little pavilion. Also up there, I have...
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Beers arrive for the benefit of the listener.
Benefit of the tape.
Cheers. Can you take these two?
Yes, please. Yeah. Thank you.
Half a pint, isn't it? Cheers, thank you.
That's how they make the money, mate.
Great.
Another one of mine was Liphook, which I've only played there once a few years ago, and I was a big fan of. Really nice, like, I like grounds where the pavilion's sort of raised up a little bit.
Yeah.
You sort of go down a few steps and sort of into it. I like that.
Eastern's kind of like
Eastern,
that.
Yeah, I was just thinking of Eastern.
Because of the bowl.
Yeah. Twyford is like that, but also it's so massive, it's just a bit annoying.
Yeah. I've never played there.
And then, like, lovely trees around, big fan of that. And then another one is Basingstoke, the main maze bounty pitch.
Just because,
again, a lovely little slope to bowl down.
Yeah.
And lovely facilities, just, like, guaranteed a good wicket. Mm. And... Yeah. The pavilion is nice, and you get balconies, which I'm a huge fan of. Lovely place to watch. And then you just get the knowledge of knowing, like, some of the actual greats of the game have played there.
Absolutely.
When Hampshire used to use it as an outground, like Malcolm Marshall, Shane Warne have played there. I mean, that just knowing that,
yeah,
and you're playing on the same field as them, I think is brilliant, really.
And it's another ground where Berkeley used to enter, like, a Basingstoke knockout competition where all the games were played at Basingstoke. Mm. So you were guaranteed at least one game on the front pitch, and then whatever, like, night of the week you were playing, you're guaranteed to have about 50 people there, because it's just it's just a social club. And the viewing from the, you said, wickets flat, the outfield's absolute carpet, and it's nice to be up on the balcony viewing the game, isn't it?
Yeah. Diesel, have you got a couple?
Yeah, so I also had Leckford on my top three, purely nostalgia reasons. Played a lot there, wickets great. It's great up there. I also had Ryde on there, obviously miles away, but I think I've only played there once, but the one game we did play, like, lovely day, the wicket was great, I really liked the pavilion. It just seemed like a proper ground.
That was sort of good facility.
Yeah, it was sort of my first taste of first team cricket, so it just felt like, oh, this is like,
this is something,
sort of,
yeah,
a bit of a step up.
This is
up.
Where I want to be.
Yeah. And then lastly, I've gone with Amport. Played a lot of youth cricket there. Again, just really like the ground. In terms of pavilion, it reminds me a little bit of Long Parish, just in terms of ground, pavilion, sort of surroundings. Got on the sort of main road. And it's I just like Amport. It's nice.
Thinking just locally though, Hurstbourne Prize is worth a mention, because you look in any, like,
as good
any book that's
terrible wicket.
Well, it's just idyllic.
Yeah.
You look in any, like, book about, you know, the most picturesque grounds in the country.
Yeah,
Long Parish will be in there.
Yeah,
and so will Hurstbourne. And somewhere like Hartley Whitney.
Do you remember when you hit me for six there in that pub game a couple of years ago?
Heavy red.
I was only bowling a spin, but yeah,
15 meters straight boundary.
I'll chuck Whirlwell in the shit.
Yeah,
don't
definitely.
Yeah.
Dive, yeah. Real dive.
Yeah. I'm happily chuck that on the bonfire.
Yeah, and it's like the whole, you know, you either are a good club with good blokes, shit club full of shit blokes, or you could be shit club, good blokes, Well, good club, shit blokes.
Yeah.
And you got
sort of Venn diagram.
You know, when you sort of look at shit blokes to.
Yeah. And you mentioned Amperol, I would say that's a good club full of shit blokes. Whereas someone like Whirlwell is a shit club full of shit blokes. You know? And then you got Long Parish, which is obviously a good club, good blokes.
Yeah,
great blokes.
Some of the best.
But the most niche one is a shit club full of good blokes.
Have you got an example of that?
Well, maybe Compton. Maybe.
Yeah, okay.
It's a shit ground.
I like Compton. They're fine.
Yeah, they're all right. But they're good blokes. Yeah. So there you go. Ticked all the boxes then.
Perfect.
Instagram. Listeners, we want to know what your top three grounds are.
Let us know.
Slide into our DMs.
Long Parish Creek Club Instagram DMs.
LongParishCreekClub@gmail.com.
Your top three. And also, grounds. If you can also think of any examples of shit clubs full of good blokes, that's quite niche. We'd love to know your thoughts.
So we interviewed Warren a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
We wanted to find out a bit more about the history of the club when it was at a low point. He told us they didn't win a game for 5 years.
Yeah.
Which I find incredible, and also admire a lot of those guys for sort of sticking with it despite all the issues they were facing.
Yeah.
Around the club. Diesel, what were your sort of takeaways from that interview?
Well, it's just, as you say, the reason we did it was that we wanted to. There'll be a lot of people in the club who won't know, who will just think the club is where it is and that's that. They don't know why, they don't know how. Even going back 5-10 years, won't have a clue. It was just sort of to get that sort of side of it, really. But it was very interesting. Obviously, Warren's got lots and lots of stories, where Long Parish was sort of on the brink of folding, basically. Yeah.
Which is hard to imagine now.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. You look at it now, three teams, midweek, Sunday, whatever, indoor teams, and you just think, oh, that happened overnight. And it didn't. It was very interesting to hear. A lot of stories I didn't know about, and I'm sure not a lot of others will know about.
What do you think, Spear?
Yeah, very similar, really. Really interesting, like, talking to him, and echo what Diesel said there, really. It's just that what's there now is because of quite a lot of hard work and, in the context, sacrifice that went in from players and people who gave up their time and put in a bit of money and things like that.
Yeah.
So it makes you, hopefully, people who are new to the club, not even new, like, been there for a while, but just
didn't quite understand.
Yeah. Very grateful for what's there. Also, how much the club means to him, because I know we don't like see him that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He comes to a few games and stuff, and
there's probably a few people who don't know who he
is. No,
exactly,
is
yeah.
True as well, yeah.
And I think what struck me was like how much he's so pleased. You can tell he's so pleased.
He's proud.
Proud, even. Yeah. About sort of the fact that the club is thriving.
Yeah.
Really, at the moment. Now so more than ever, and that's down to people like him going through some pretty tough time. Not, you know, grand scheme of life, not tough, but in cricket terms, losing every week, turning up, playing in teams that are much better than you, turn up with like 9-10 men, and just keeping going, because you look around the county, clubs fold all the time and new clubs aren't really appearing. It's just you know, Hurstbourne's gone, Berkeley went. Wherever you look around the county, there's probably last few years there's probably 10 or so clubs that have just packed in because they're in a very similar position to what Long Parish were, and instead of deciding to go for it, they didn't. And it's quite interesting that bit he said about that sort of do or die AGM, where it was like, look, someone's either got to take over the club now or it's done. And
his dad sort of stepped in.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know who Warren is, and there might be a few who don't, he sort of, when me and Brinton were first sort of playing adult cricket, he was captain of the second team, was captain for a number of years. Then obviously when the third team came, after a few years of the third team being there, he then captained the third team and then obviously stopped playing. And as Harry said, we don't see him much around the club, but obviously...
No. Still got a place in his heart.
Yeah, of course. Just a bit of background on him.
And interesting that Neil, Bonatham. We had a good yarn about him about umpiring.
Yeah.
Apparently, he was the first ever coach.
And, really? Wilder Kane
said that the first ever coaching session, first ever set of youths was done by him.
Yeah. So like 6-9 year olds, Wilder Kane being one of them. Just having a net. By the wall, basically, without a net. It was just hitting into a wall.
That's huge.
Right, so this week we are joined by Warren, legend of Long Parish. So I'm just going to read out his stat line first, Warren. So we got, this is just going by the website. This is just going by the website. So this is 2010 onwards, I think, which might limit some of the stats, probably miss out some of your best scores, probably, I'd have thought.
I would too.
So we've got 114 matches, 1,489 runs, a high score of 71, and a batting average of 17.11. So pretty standard figures.
We're not going to get on, are we, mate?
So take us back to when you joined Long Parish. What year was it, and what state was the club in then?
I joined in 93 or 94. And I was born in 82, so that'll give you a sort of indication. And I went straight in the first team because we had nine. I ended up being involved with Long Parish because Dad knew the publican of the local pub, surprisingly. And he went to a committee meeting to help out and got voted in as chairman. And I was a cricket mad, playing a really good level at school. I was playing first 11 at school at the time. And so I ended up there. And I've never played anywhere else, not even Penton. Clarkie can prove that. I'm going to keep digging at Clarkie the whole time, by the way. I ended up playing there. There were highs and lows. We weren't very good. There's no secret in that one. In fact, we weren't really a cricket team, but we got through.
I just want to ask, basically, obviously, first of all, Warren, I've got two things to say. First of all, one is it's great to have you on the pod. And second, your stats. I can remember you playing against you in a Sunday game. I was playing for Whitchurch
Court on the boundary, 98.
There you go. You took the words out of my mouth. I was going to say 90-odd, but 98.
No, 98. It was 98. I know it was 98.
So your highest score here is 71.
It was 73.
We can rub that out and put in 98. So
yeah, cheers. That's better.
I think I was about 13 or 14 or something. I just remember that really, really vividly. Talking about your time at Long Parish then, you obviously joined quite a long time ago. How in the time that you played, how did the club change or progress or sort of get worse and then get better?
Well, I think I joined at the lowest ebb, as many people would say. It went downhill when I joined. It's difficult to explain because you see where the club is now, and I'm incredibly proud's the wrong word, and I shouldn't use it, but I am proud. There wasn't going to be a club. It's not that we were rubbish. There just wasn't going to be a club. And you guys all know this. Hurstbourne Priors don't exist. Appleshaw don't exist. I don't think Penton exists anymore, Clarkie. So many of these sides have just gone. And how Long Parish stayed in existence was down to about three or four people. Kenny Ball, Frank Hibbard, the old man, obviously. Jeff White, even Chris Clark, as much as I don't want to give him any credit for it. But it was finished. It was finished as a club. And I don't think people really understand that. It really was that bad. We were turning up to play. We played Leckford with eight, I think, and they scored 360 against us.
Leckford was a big 13. Club at that stage, yeah.
Sorry?
Leckford were a good side at that point.
Yeah, and they don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And so just to keep the club going, was just such an incredible... It shouldn't have happened, and it did through the force of will of a few people. And people putting their hand in their pocket, and it makes you so proud about where we are, where the club is now. I don't claim any credit for it at all. But it's the character of the club, and I think that's incredibly important. And I'm proud with everyone that I've played with during that time and during beyond. So it was too important to fail, and it didn't. And so I'm really proud of that.
But what about the cricket specifically in those early days?
You just we didn't play any. We just turned up.
Yeah.
Oh, I was 13 bowling in County One, being smacked around the whole time. But I mean, they let Clarkie open the bowling. It was a disgrace. I told you I'd just slack him off the whole time. No, but we turn up with people that just didn't play cricket. And I think it showed how much people love the club. You know, we didn't mind turning up and being thrashed, but we just wanted to make sure we turned up. And that was really important, where people came and went, but there was a real good core of people that kept that club going. And I hope there's a core of, well, I know there's a core of people at the club now, a massive core of people. I think that's so important, because it's so hard to run a village cricket team now. Yeah, we've all seen it. There's so many distractions. After lockdown, I thought we might lose the thirds, but it seems to be going. It's difficult. It's never easy, but you've got people who aren't there for their own ego. They're there because they believe and love the club. And I think that's massively important. And it's brilliant you guys are doing something like this, which, yeah, we couldn't get an 11 together. In fact, you're doing a podcast. That's how things have changed.
And yeah, could you have imagined sort of Paris reaching, obviously, three teams now, midweek, Sunday? Could you sort of have imagined back then that it would have got to this stage? Or was it sort of more, you're just sort of fighting a losing battle? Or was it sort of just planning?
No, I think we're always quite positive. And I think to run any club, you need, or any team, you need six or seven people you know will turn up, because then you bring everyone else with you. It's like running, when I ran the third team, when I ran the second team, I knew seven or eight of my 11 the morning after the game before. And if I didn't know that, you just couldn't have done it. And then obviously your old man or Jacko would nick half of them, and that absolutely fucked me. But just having people that are committed, and that's what you need to generate within a club. I've spoken to so many people that run so many other different clubs, and they don't have that. And that's the difference. That's what Long Parish had. Long Parish had loyalty. And there's people that don't play anymore, but I know how interested they still are. And I think that's just the mark of a club. And I'm incredibly proud of that. And I had nothing to do with it, but I'm proud of it.
How good did it feel then when the club did start to turn itself around and begin to rise back through the leagues?
It sounds silly, but it's great that people are getting the same joy that we got. You know, I go down there and see some of the old boys that have been down there. You know, I went to the funeral recently of one of them. You know, Long Parish means something to people. And I'm so proud of seeing you guys who started playing when you were 13, 14. You know, it's great. You're getting out of it what I got out of it. And it's brilliant to see it thrive.
Let's go on a bit of a lighter note, shall we, and say, like things like a tour. You went on a few tours, Warren?
No, you're not saying this story.
What are your memories of tour?
Not much, to be honest. I don't know which stories I can tell, because I'm worried that it's about
me. I've never been on a Long Parish tour, and lots of people who listen won't have been. What can you give us a background as to, like, you know, where it was to and what the general sort of itinerary was?
Yeah, we generally went to Seaton in Devon. Justin Jackman's family are from there. His brother's from there. His dad was from there. And we wanted to play them. And I always scored runs on tour. It was really weird. So it turns out being pissed is excellent. It was just, especially in the early days, it was a real relief to get away from league cricket where we were fighting tooth and nail normally to stay up. And seeing Barry Blackmore dance, it's a force of nature. You've got to see that. But it was rubbish. It was absolutely rubbish. But we went there. We played two games of cricket normally against Axmouth and Seaton or Lyme Regis or someone like that. But it was an absolute... It was brilliant to go away with guys that we normally had a beer or two beers after the game. You actually got to really know them, you know, by being in the pub with them all afternoon or before the games or whatever. I remember one game we played at Axminster and Steve Mancini, who had the cricketers, and Smithy and a couple of the Tim, I can't remember Tim's surname, Big Tim, you might know him. They all came down as well and they took Dad to the pub and they were giving him Fosters. And he had about four Fosters and it turned out to be Stella. And he went out to umpire, not a clue. Absolutely no idea which direction the bowler was bowling, which isn't unusual to be honest. Yes. But it was just such a wonderful little story. The other time we turned up for a game and there were marquees for a wedding on the pitch. So I think he screwed that one up as well. But we were more than happy. We went to a pub in Western Supermare. That's how exciting that one was. But they were great to get away with people when it did. For me, as normally as a captain or at least a senior player, it was great to get away where it just didn't matter. And you could give young players a chance. Diesel, you went on tour, didn't you?
Yeah, I had a few trips down there.
Yeah,
it was good laugh.
Yeah, it was nice. We took some young players down there. I mean, I know that Jordan and Jamie went down as well. I wouldn't get away with it now. I'm married, but it was good fun. And if anyone tells you any stories about me, they're not true. Especially the one about the barmaid. But it was great to go away, and I'm surprised you guys don't do it. Dawny fell asleep. He went to sleep under his car because he lost his keys and then found his keys in his pocket the next morning. I got called into the hotel manager's office because I'd broken into the hotel, which turns out it was Chris Clark, and I had to take an absolute bollocking. It was just a ridiculous place. It was just silly, but it was fun.
Looking back, Warren, what are your fondest memories on and off the field?
I didn't have many fond memories on the field. Off the field, it was probably watching De Kane I get his first 100. I enjoyed that. I was incredibly proud, and I had no reason to be proud for it. I had nothing in it, but watching the guys tapping as well, Ben Gardner, watching guys you kind of helped along when they were 12, 13. And also in the second team or third team, and you see them develop. It makes you incredibly proud, and you'll always kind of be a bit proud of them. And it's a bit weird. On the pitch, the guy that turned up at Sparshot with what are those bats called when they don't have any shoulders?
Mongoose.
Yes. Guy turned up there. I launched into him. Absolutely launched into him, gave him so much shit. First ball, he nicked behind, caught it slip. I enjoyed that. I'll be honest, that was absolutely brilliant. Mainly sledging. I enjoyed sledging a lot. I was never rude, always polite.
Okay, Warren, I got told by my dad that there's a story about being sick on a cricket field. Can you add anything to that?
Michelmersh and Timsbury. Yeah, I'd been out, I can't remember, it might have been my 30th birthday, I don't think it was. And I wasn't meant to play. And I said, I just come and field. And I ended up opening the bowling as normal. I got down the hill. So whoever was coming up the hill must have been shit. But yeah, I threw up twice in the hedgerow. I really wasn't well. I shouldn't have been playing.
You had any wickets?
Yes. Yeah, I got. Do you know what? I know my figures. That's really worrying. I got 3 for 31 off 10.
You mentioned Neil there. Your dad is a legend. What about his association with the club?
It's not really for me to say, is it? I can't. What's the... There'd be no long parish about that. And that's just the fact. For a guy that's useless at cricket, I mean, he is absolutely appalling. I'm the talented one in the family, and that's worrying. The club wouldn't have existed past that AGM. And he'll never claim any credit, and I'm never going to give him any credit. But I think everyone knows that, so that's me out, if that makes sense.
Fair enough.
Well, also, before we put your bowling to bed, Brent, you didn't mention his bowling stats at the start there.
Well, no, it's
Warren. Fuck off, Brenton.
I've got him here. To be honest,
How many hat tricks have you taken, Brenton?
None. But on your
website, there you go.
Mate, you're fine. There's only six not matches
the website.
On it.
I was shit when the website was around.
So pre-website, and you can say anything you want because nobody will ever know.
Yeah.
What was your best bowling performance?
Make it up.
For Long Parish.
For Long Parish, 6 for 8 against a midweek game, and the cloud level was really low. I took 6 for 8.
What did you
say? It was swinging all over the place.
Just swing.
So that's in 4 overs, is it?
No, it's 5. Both ball 5 at the time.
Yeah.
Expensive, I know, but you know all about that.
If you were to compare yourself to one current Long Parish bowler, who would it be for the audience?
Because it's all gone downhill and I can barely turn my arm over, I'd say Alex Brinton.
Very good.
Ben Gardner, that's when I was bowling swing. Yeah. Ben can swing a ball. Not many of you guys can, but Ben can.
He can do a lot worse than Ben Gardner. Okay, Warren, we've come to the end of the interview. Fascinating stories and some very honest answers, and also some amazing insight into, you know, why the club is here and why we're so lucky to be a part of it right now is because of a lot of dark times and graft that went on quite a long time ago. But now's your chance to tell us what your all-time Long Parish 11 is of players that you've played with.
The problem is I kind of thought about it. Is it people I wanted to play with, i.e. people that buy a beer, or people I did play with that were actually any good? So I went with the guys that were any good. So, yeah, you didn't get in a hand. First of all, I think one of the most... Sorry?
But you'd have a beer with me, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah. That's not the criteria. I'm not picking the seconds now, mate.
He drinks.
Yeah, he drinks.
Yeah.
First of all, I've gone with a kid. I'm calling guys kids and I'm in their mid-20s now. I've gone with a kid. I think he's got all the ability in the world and he doesn't know it. And it frustrates the hell out of me and a lot of other people. But he's still going to do it. Opening, I've got Mike Taplin. I still think he's that good.
Mm.
I really do. Opening alongside him is a guy called Paul White, who you guys might not know. Paul unfortunately passed away 10, 15 years ago. He had a brain aneurysm, but he opened the bowling with Clarkey for years, but he scored 100 in a midweek game. You know, he was that disruptive. Third, I've gone for Anand Doshi. I didn't particularly agree that we had an overseas player. But boy, the guy could play. Yeah, he could bat, he could bowl. He's a lovely bloke. invited me to his wedding in India and I didn't go. Four, I can't not have Will DC. Yeah, and I mean, it was me or him. And so that's a call I had to make. Oh. And he kind of edged it, mainly because he designs roundabouts now. So I'd have something interesting to talk to him about.
Is this when you text me in the week saying I'm finding it really hard to decide on my team? It was that number four spot.
Well, no, luckily at number five, it's me. No, number five is Tognarelli. I've never seen anyone hit ball so cleanly. Frustrated the hell out of me because if he just knuckled down, he'd score more runs. But yeah, who am I to criticise? Six is Ross Stewart. I don't think any of you played with him.
Well, Ross enough, we used to play his team because he moved down Seaton Way and we used to play his team on the way back up.
Yeah. Down
he was in Alcutsey's all time 11.
Yeah,
he was in Alcutsey's all time 11.
So there's a bit of crossover there.
Yeah, well, he's probably old enough to remember him. No, Ross was he was a brilliant batsman, a brilliant bowler. You just couldn't leave him out. He had massive hands. And also his father-in-law owned a pub. So, you know, it's ticking all the boxes. But Rossi was the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet. After that, I've kind of gone sentimental a little bit and I've gone for Jacko. Just because what that guy's done for the club. I think the guys that saved the club were incredibly important. But guys like Jacko and Martin have taken that club forward. And that was something the people that saved the club couldn't have done. And so I think it's all part, massive part of the journey without sounding all emotional. Also, he used to be a decent batsman. I know he's a bit dog shit now, but yeah, he really could hit a ball. After that, I've gone a little bit left field. I've gone for a guy who didn't play much for us, but boy, was he good when he did. Ed Gardner, who I think you guys might have played with.
Yeah.
He was a really, really decent batsman. Mm. And he could bowl a little bit as well.
I looked up because I was looking up averages for the twos to find your stats. And he's.
Yeah, cheers, mate.
Second team batting averages, an average of 105 or something.
Yeah.
Something silly.
Yeah, a bit like my bowling average. Yeah, I don't like that website. It doesn't do me any favours. After Ed, there's a guy called Richard Boot, who I don't think you guys will remember at all. He opened the bowling probably 2006, 2007. He was a cracking bowler. Ended up going to St. Cross. Okay. He opened the bowling for St. Cross. He was only with us for a couple of years, but he was a really, really cracking bowler. Probably after Ross Stewart, probably the best opening bowler we've had. Those two together were absolutely fantastic. Then I've gone with Bob Sturt, just because I played with him for years. I wish you could have seen him play as he did. He was an absolute knob. And I've told him that to his face.
He knows he's a knob. Bob.
It's interchangeable, I believe. But I don't think he'd have played as well for us when I was captaining, if I hadn't been captaining, because I was just on his shoulder the whole time, just calming him down. Fantastically talented cricketer. And if you ever chat to him, listen to him, he can be a complete dick sometimes, but he knows what he's talking about. And he knows I'll call him a dick. So he's a good man to listen to. And I needed a slow bowler. So I went for the obvious choice. I went for Chris Clark. Just, you know, because he just gives it flight and guile, loop. That's all. It's, Chris is my best friend at the club. Always has been, always will be. He's been through it all as well. I'm so pleased to see him still playing. I give him a load of shit, of course I do, but he's the most reliable man you'll ever meet. apart from when he has to play badminton instead of a Tuesday night game. Cool. So I couldn't do this without some honourable mentions. I mean, how could I have 11 players when I played for the club for so many years? My 12 men, because they were always reliable. I'd always get them down from London. Even got one back from Iraq at one point, would be Nick Dorney and Adam Seidman. I'd have to pay for all their beer, but sometimes that's what you've got to do as a captain, it seemed. But don't get any ideas. I'm not coming back as captain. My scorer in my top 11 would be Frank Hibbard. How could it not be? The guy was a legend of the club, alongside his wife, Kate. And guys, 20 years ago, his daughter was a stunner, Fiona. As a 13-year-old, it was just ridiculous. I was just silly. I couldn't address her. I couldn't talk to her. But Frank and Kate were a massive part of this club. They were part of the fabric that kept it going. Frank and Kate, because we were playing a Sunday friendly once, and Dad was arranging teas. I don't know if any of you guys played this.
I think I know this story.
Firstly, he's an idiot. Take it from there. But he forgot about teas. So we all turned up for tea and there was nothing there. So instead, he bought both sides a Sunday roast at the cricketers to make up for it. And to be honest, nobody really likes teas. A Sunday roast is far better. I thought that summed him up in so many ways.
So he bought
full of good intent, but fucking useless.
22 Sunday roasts.
Two teams Sunday roast, yeah. He bought 22 Sunday roasts out of social embarrassment. Which That's was fantastic. Brilliant. I think he also paid the bar bill as well. So it must have cost him about 500 quid. Yeah. Idiot.
Expensive mistake.
What can you say?
Thank you so much for coming on, Warren. We've had some quite deep chat at the start about how you guys saved the club back in the 90s. That was really interesting.
No, whoa. We didn't save the club. A lot of people saved the club.
Okay, a lot.
I think that's a really important point to make. I mean, a lot
of people did a lot of work. Obviously, you've been quite modest. You put yourself out of that. But you turn up and play. And I was talking to Clarkie about this at the weekend, and although there are lots of people needed behind the scenes to do this and that, fact is people need to give up their weekends, give up their holidays, play.
So I get a prize for attendance. Is that what you're telling me?
Effort. Good effort award.
It is. It was people that care. That's what it came down to. And Clarkie cared enough to piss off to Penton for a year. Did I mention that? It's people cared, and that was really important. And I see it with you guys. You just see it. There's people. The fact you're doing this, guys, it's incredibly important. You're not going to be the future of the club, you guys. I mean, you're all in your mid-20s now. There's going to be a next generation, and maybe you're the next generation after myself and Clarkie. It's brilliant to see. It really is. It makes me incredibly proud, and I've got no right to be proud of it, but it makes me incredibly proud, and well done. And that's not meant to sound patronising. I'll patronise you when you're playing.
All right. Perfect. Cheers, Warren. Thank you very much. So, thanks to Warren for joining us for that. On a slightly more jolly note, I think. Well, the interview was jolly, but now we're moving it. We're switching up the pace. Diesel's got a little quiz for us. Do you want to introduce it and then sort of get rolling?
It's very simple. Last night we were sort of scrambling at what we were going to do. So, it's just a simple nearest two quiz. Play along at home. Get a notepad and pen.
Get a notepad and pen.
We'll give you a couple of seconds to go get that.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, got it. Right.
Right.
Okay.
Pause the tape.
Good. Okay. So,
what's going to happen is I'm going to say it's to do with someone at the club and they're a stat of theirs. And you're both going to write down what you think it is and the nearest two wins. It's very, very simple. So,
what's the name of this game?
It's just nearest two.
simple. Really.
Nearest two coming up. Matt Jackman's indoor runs all time.
Indoor runs?
Indoor runs.
Okay. Wow.
Brent, we'll start with you.
Wow. I'm going to go for... He must have played a hell of a lot of indoor games.
What do you think at home, guys?
What do you think at home? Play along, play along.
He's a good indoor stick.
They're all relevant stats.
Yeah,
all
okay.
Good stats.
I'm going to go for 1,500.
I'll put 3,000.
Harry, you are closest. It is 2,697. Lots
well
of
runs.
Well over half his runs.
Well done, Aries. Stunk
at 25.
Yeah, yeah. Stunk over retired.
25 red, yeah.
Cool. Next up, Wilder Kanai first team 50s.
I think it's something like...
Go on, Brent, we'll go with you.
Okay, I think it's something like 40.
I'll put 45.
Brent is closer. It's 31.
What
the crick?
That is a silly amount of 50s.
That is a silly... I knew it was a lot.
Next up, Will Samway's under 15 runs.
Niche.
Okay. I'm going to go for 1,000.
Would have said 1,800, but...
1,800?
In under 15?
637 under 15. That's 2-1 to Brain. That's a silly amount of under 15 runs. Silly. You haven't played there for like 3 years. I mean, 620.
just
in 2020.
I was factoring in that.
Okay, Alex Cootsie's high score. I'd have thought you'd be favourite here, Harry. The amount you've been on that website, coming up with quizzes during isolation and things.
Okay.
Yeah, good quiz, though, didn't I?
105.
I'll put 106.
It's 118, so it's Desmond. It's 2-2.
It's Desmond.
Nice.
Cool. So, the overall club midweek hundreds. How many have there been midweek hundreds? And extra points for who's got them.
That's a hell of a snap. What, like, this person got two? Or
no,
just, the
just,
name?
Just name.
Okay.
So, Brinton, how many midweek hundreds? Obviously... Oh, well, you probably can't just say because you'll just copy. But if you've got them written down,
yeah, written
so
down,
fine.
So.
Fine, Brinton.
Legit.
All right.
How many midweek hundreds do you think there have been, listeners? Write them down.
If you're driving, don't. Pull over to one side.
Pull over to a lay-by.
Say to a lay-by.
Yeah, and then...
Email it to the Ramada in Reading.
I reckon 6.
I'll put 3. Okay. Mike and Will.
Yeah, mine would be Mikey, Will... Stuart talking already, maybe chipping in with one. And then
so you both get 2 points for Mike and Will. They were the only two scorers of 100, but there have been 6. Wilder Kanai with... Oh, no, there have been 5. Wilder Kanai with 4, Mike Tapman with 1.
4?
Midweek turn.
That's a fucking
that
joke.
So that's 3, that well, disgusting. What's that? 6, 5 to Brinton.
Okay.
Nice.
What's it first to?
Well, it's just got the most of the internet. Nathan Smith, best bowling figures.
Oh, it is something vile.
Now, I'll give you a bit of a hint. I thought it'd be better than this.
Okay.
Obviously, it's unreal, the figures, but I thought it'd be better.
Okay. Is it 6 for, like, 15?
I put 5 for 6.
So, Brinton's closer. It's 6 for 25.
Is it?
Yeah. Great figs. What did you go for then?
Why would you think that's better than 6 for 25?
Because it's Nate, isn't it? You it's thought he'd six. Have like a 6 for 9.
I thought I was close to saying.
6 for.
I thought it'd be close.
I was going to put 6 for something then, and you threw me with it.
I thought.
No, it was more the runs. I thought he'd just get like a 6 for 12 or
I thought,
something.
I rank. Thought it was almost a 7 for, but I wasn't quite sure.
Mm-hmm. 6 for 25. This is a good one coming up. Got there, Harry. Just
got
a bit
your,
of admin.
Got your burner phone out.
Got his phone out. But where's that phone come from?
The drug deal's off, right?
What's that, skunk?
Man,
so, the date of Harry Martin's 138 not out.
Oh, it's tattooed on my back. Oh, my goodness me.
Well, you don't get this. Okay.
What do you want, the date?
The date. So I've got the day of the week, and then the day of the month,
okay.
The month, and then the year.
Right, it was a Sunday.
Wow. Let's not dwell on that.
That's Sunday.
Tons. Okay.
July. July 25th, 2016.
I've put 15th of August, 2014.
That's ridiculously close. You're a week out. 24th of August, 2014. Yeah.
I remember it was August, but I remember the year.
That's silly knowledge.
You score a ton, you don't forget about it.
So what's that now? 7-6, I believe. To Brinton, still. Could be wrong. Go with
Why
it.
Not?
Chris Clark, league wickets. Obviously, Clarky will just be reading that off straight away.
Straight away, I'm there.
He'll know. But he'll know it with interest, because he'll have his
he'll know each one.
Figs from the 90s, the noughties.
Well, this is from 2010 onwards. Yeah,
since records
so
began.
So obviously double that and add some more, right?
Yeah.
Brinton?
Okay. 115.
225.
I think Harry's closer. What is 174. It?
Come on.
Sevensies. Toby Trinder not out in the league cricket.
He stinks of red.
He does, yeah. He bleeds red.
Harry, start with you.
10.
15.
No 16 way. Not outs.
That's
8-7 to Brinton.
Right.
Okay, this one's a bit...
How many questions left?
1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay, so it's all still to play for, right?
Well, yeah.
What are your scores at home?
Yeah. Add them up.
Let us know.
Email in.
Okay, so 8-7, 3 to play.
3 to play.
Come on.
Justin Jackman, innings.
Oh, wow. Does this include
all
indoor?
Time.
Indoor as well.
All time.
Combine,
all time.
Okay. I'm going to go for 300.
I'll put 350.
Brinton wins it by 2.
You're joking.
3-2-3.
Oh, what?
323 innings.
That's a lot of sticks.
That's a lot of sticks. What's his average?
Don't know.
Okay.
I haven't got that sort of info on me.
What if don't know was an option?
Do you know what the question is? And the weaknesses. Right, Alex Brinton. Combined, bowling average and economy.
Oh, high.
Bear in mind, indoor cricket.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah, kills your indoor cricket.
Okay. Bowling average of...
You going first, Brim?
Yeah. 26, economy of 7.5.
I've got the exact same average, 26. I've put 4.7 as an economy, though.
What did you put for your economy?
7.5.
So you're both pretty off. An average of 29.41.
That's quite close.
That's all right, yeah.
And then economy of 5.89. So that's a ding for Spear,
yep.
I believe.
So...
Eight.
And this is
eight,
the last question.
Last question.
Tiebreaker. Right. Tiebreaker.
Last one. This is
real.
Separate the men from the boys.
This is the real
one.
This is the real.
Barry Blackmore, all time overs.
Oh, what?
What the crick? It's a lot.
7-8 overs maximum per bowler. Times.
Yeah, but there were times
16 games a season.
That's when it was times when it was 10 overs.
Oh yeah, he probably played in the unlimited overs.
All right, okay. I'm gonna go for 600.
I've literally written 1,500.
Yeah, 1,564.
Yes! Yes! Come on!
500
He's
overs!
He's taking it at the death.
600 overs!
That's not even that much, is it?
Come on.
Oh, that's 9-8. That's a landslide.
That's a landslide.
How good's that?
That's good.
1500.
Though. Yeah.
It doesn't include overs from this season. It'll be spot on.
I think it does. It will include.
No, but if his answer didn't.
Yeah, well.
That's the game.
Great, and that's the real quiz. Thanks for joining us.
How did you do at home?
Let us know.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad.
Not quite us, but you know, not bad.
Take a photo, send it in.
What'd you get?
We'll read it, and that'll be that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The winner.
Real winner is the quiz.
So, just to wrap it up, we're going to look forward to this week's games. The first team, we've got Burridge at home. Second team make the possible title-deciding trip to Littleton.
Huge
and
game.
West.
Come on, the Magoos.
Come on, the Magoos. See it home.
Yeah.
It's all could be plain sailing after that. I don't want to speak too soon. But if they get a win, they're in. They're in business.
Well in business.
And the threes have OTS and Romsey fourths. So big game for them. I'm sure they'll be carrying on just skittling teams and just winning.
Have a stick, lads.
Have a stick. Win a toss, have a stick. Make a game
Give
of it.
Give the people what they want.
Make a game of it for people.
For God's sake.
Yeah.
So thanks for listening. We've enjoyed recording it. Hopefully
you've enjoyed listening.
Hopefully you have enjoyed listening. You played along to the quiz at home. Let us know how you got on. And we will see you next time.
Thanks a lot.